Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parenting Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parenting Hell with...
Finn. Can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
And can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
Good boy.
Oh. There we go.
Good boy. That's what I say to my dog.
Good boy.
How is the dog?
Yeah, he's all right. He's quite easy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Whippets. It's half cat. It's no stress, really. He keeps nicking food off the... Basically, he don't nick food off the table to anyone apart from my youngest, but that's because she waves it around right in front of his nose, and she also secretly feeds him when we're not looking.
It's very
difficult to tell the dog off because he's been...
Yeah.
And we keep saying to her, you're feeding the dog, aren't you? She goes, no, but then I catch her, feed it. So he knows she'll feed him, and also she's takes longer to eat and she like floats it around, so she sort of walks up and leaves her plate empty.
So it's
a bit of a difficult one. But yeah, he's all right. He's good, Fred. I'm going to take him for a walk in a minute. They're easy to walk. If you're hungover, you can stand in a field and just throw a ball. You don't have to walk them.
Have you got one of those ball thrower things? Those weird things.
So your hands get wet.
Oh, that looks really fun.
It is fun, but what is annoying, you launch it and then he just goes, nah, I don't want to do that, actually. And then you walk 100 metres to find the ball.
Did I tell you we've got... I didn't tell you this. We've got to buy a fountain for our cat to drink from.
Why?
Who are we? Because our cat...
Beryl.
Because Beryl, she's... we need her to drink as much fluid as possible for the rest of her life.
And good water.
Yeah, but also cats like to drink from moving water. So you have to have a little cat fountain in your house. We've now got a water feature in our kitchen.
Ask Tommy Walsh over the road, see if Dimmock can put it in.
I'd love Charlie Dimmock to put it in.
Why don't you get a nice one that you can drink from? There needs to be one in... You can get them, they're constantly going, aren't they? They're quite easy to get.
I'm quite looking forward to it when it arrives.
Do you want to drink from it?
Will I drink from it?
Your one-year-old will.
Oh, don't, mate. I know this is a cliche, but why does he head to all the wrong things? Like, why is he interested in the cat food? Who gives a... What is wrong with him?
They're quite cheap, actually, these flowing water things. Little fountains.
Yeah, 25 quid.
Oh, there's a nice ceramic one that looks quite fancy that you could get. Well, rather than a plasticky one. What one have you
God,
got?
Don't, because Rose listens to this and I've bought a plastic one already, Rob. You've
plastic shit. There's a lovely one here. Look at this, ceramic. It really suit your kitchen. What one have you bought? Catmate, 20 quid Amazon.
Yeah.
That is an absolute waste of plastic. That is never staying in your house. I could get away with that in my house.
But do you know what? The person who takes it off our wall in a week will be absolutely delighted with it, Rob.
So is yours plumbed in?
What? No, we don't have to plumb it in, do we?
No, that's what I'm saying. These ones are just sort of, if they recirculate the same water.
Yeah, you just put some water in it. I just presume you plug it in and it'll go, right?
Some water might help, but apart from that...
Yeah, of course.
This ain't working. Well, I have to buy my own water. It's one of those things that when you find out you need, it's quite fun buying, isn't it? This kind of thing.
Yeah.
When you look at the options, you've just gone for a plastic one. There's loads of options.
I know, but it was at 4:30 last night, Rob. Hey, Rob and Josh, introduction from my three-year-old nephew, Finn. He lives in Littlehampton, West Sussex, but his mum is originally from Nottingham, so she sometimes goes a bit northern, much to my brother's dismay. It's very funny when he says dumper truck, part southern, part Midlands. Oh, Dumper Chook, she's written. Thanks Dumper for Chook. Everything, Joe from Crawley, West Sussex.
Well done, mate. He was a good one. I liked his.
Yeah, it was a strong one, wasn't it? Good solid. Old Finn.
How are you, Josh? All good? Or do you want to do some emails? What are you feeling? Anything to...
I'm feeling all right. I've not got anything else in my life at the moment. It's all cat. It's
cat
all
cat. Oh, we're doing a sausage taste test.
What?
Well, basically, my kids love sausages or hate them. And, like, they'll go, oh, I don't like that one. It's got green in. But I just sort of buy whatever sausages are on special at the shops. But then that leads to confusion to my children. And they all of a sudden won't eat them. So I think I'm going to buy all the different sausages, cook them all, and do a taste test. And then once they've picked the one they like best, I'm going to buy that one until they leave my house.
That is a good idea, Rob. That's a genuinely good idea.
It is, isn't it? And then you're guaranteed.
But you've overlooked that children sometimes will just suddenly decide they don't like something just to prove a point.
Well, no, but I've made them sign a contract.
Did you just drop a coin on the table?
No, I dropped the lid of my water bottle, sorry.
Didn't ruin the podcast, it's fine.
Do you know what I've worked out as well that's made me calm down a bit, Josh? Right?
Yeah.
And I think this might help you because you're quite busy with your cat and stuff. Yeah.
So what a life. You're quite busy with your cat. What does that say about me?
You're a bit stressed about your cat and stuff. Well, because I used to think, right, I wanted to change things, right? So, like, oh, if this isn't working out for me, change that, do that and stuff. And it's quite exhausting trying to make sure everything's all right. So, like, obviously you need to get the water thing for the cat. But, like, you sometimes, you're worrying yourself at dinner about your cat and all things like that. And I realised it's not about changing what's happening to your advantage. It's about accepting what's happening, then work out how it is to your advantage.
Right. So talk me through this.
Okay. So Your cat's not well.
Yeah.
Right? Worst case scenario is...
Yeah.
Cat's gone.
The cat's gone.
You're not spending as much on cat food?
Yeah, right, yeah, positive.
Less pet insurance.
Less pet insurance, yep.
And then you're always... how many other cats you got?
One.
You've done the grief early. It's not looming over you.
Yeah.
I mean, the death of a cat is a difficult one. That doesn't really work for the death of a cat.
Okay. How about this?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you something I'm stressed about.
Okay.
I am stressed about the impending deadline of the first draft of our book, Rob.
You're worried about that?
Well, as an example.
As an example. Well, no, but the advantage would be is it's done then, isn't it? Once it's done, it's done.
The advantage is it'll be done and it doesn't drag on. And also the advantage is everyone works better to a deadline. So it's
100%. Yeah, you exactly. Work back to death. If they said you've got next year to do it, it'll be hanging over you for the whole year.
Oh, and I'd never get around
if
to it.
You'd feel like this at December if they said it had to be in for January.
Exactly.
So you get it done and out the way. Like, you know, in Glastonbury, if you're planning stuff and go, want to go here, want to go there, and you might not get there, but you might actually turn a corner into another tent and there'll be a band on you really like.
Exactly, Rob. I'm free and easy at Glastonbury.
Surrender to it.
Rob, you do not understand. I'm a different guy when I'm at Glastonbury. I'm free and easy.
What talk me through Josh Widdicombe at Glastonbury.
Are you going to watch Supergrass? I don't really care. I'll go and watch TLC instead. Where's the crowd going?
I like this guy.
Yeah.
He's loose.
Let's get another cider. Why not? It's the weekend.
You're quite loose-neck at Glastonbury.
I am quite loose-neck at Glastonbury, yeah. I'm just a chilled-out guy at Glastonbury, Rob. Because I've got no responsibilities. Because I haven't taken a child to Glastonbury. Because I'm not clinically insane.
Oh, God, I can't wait to hear about that. When is Glastonbury? Is it 24th of...
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks' time. Have you taken children to festivals as well? Tell us how that went.
I might be going on stag do, then.
That really is the weekend when me and you are a cliché of ourselves.
I don't know if it's happening though.
I'm going to Glastonbury and you're going on stag do.
And you'll be able to guess exactly where it's being touted around as well.
Ocean Beach.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I will keep my eyes on Wayne Lineker's Instagram for that one.
I was going to say, I don't think you want people to know, but if he wants to keep his stag do quiet, you don't go to Ocean Beach, do you?
Exactly. I tell you what, Rob, we can always bleep his name out and people can guess who it is and they'll know.
Yeah. Yeah, bleep his name out. That's funny. Bleep his name out. They can guess who it is. And if you see me in the street, I'll tell you who.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we do some emails?
Do you want an email?
Yes.
Hi, Josh and Rob. Absolutely love the show. After listening to the episode where Josh was lamenting how many stairs he had to climb to his daughter's relocated bedroom, I'm here to claim the longest bedroom commute crown.
Ooh.
At the moment, my two daughters are 7 and 4, and I are living temporarily with my parents, who live in a beautiful converted barn.
Mm.
As you'll no doubt know...
And they live five-hour drive away with their mum. So I drive for 5 hours and go up the stairs. No joke.
As you will no doubt know, barns tend to be rather long, and the quirky layout means that the four bedrooms are split into two separate upstairs areas, both accessed by a separate staircase at either end of a very long house. The spare bedrooms available to us at the time of moving in meant that they are in one section and I am in the other. They are so far away, I have to use a baby monitor so I can hear them in case of emergency, even though they're 7 and 4. If I do have to go up to my bedroom, my commute is as follows. Out of my bedroom, along a landing, down the stairs, through a large hall, down a step into the kitchen, through the kitchen, through the dining room, through the lounge, through another hall, up the stairs, along the landing, arrive in daughter's bedroom.
How many steps is that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh, no, I mean actual steps, not the, oh, not actual the procedure. Steps.
Oh, I don't know.
Are you watching him do it? He's got long legs.
It's Fiona.
Oh, Fiona, sorry, Fiona.
So probably shorter legs, probably more steps. Yeah. Then, to get back to my bedroom,
women
I do the
are
reverse.
Women are smaller. He's not being sexist. Women
I'm
are
not being sexist.
Shorter.
That is a physical fact.
He's not saying... Josh Widdicombe is not saying women can't walk. They can walk.
I'm not saying that.
He's not saying women can't walk. He's saying they can walk.
I'm just saying the average height of a woman is shorter than the height of a man. Yeah. Not me. I'm about not the you, average no, height of a woman.
You're an exception to the rule. You've got the height and the legs of a woman.
Exactly.
The body of a boy and the head of an old man.
Oh, that is an image. If you could picture that, then do draw that and send it in.
Okay, yeah, that'd be a lovely little sketch.
Yeah, lovely.
Okay, sorry. Yes, this week we've got Rich Wilson.
Oh, this is a great interview. Really, really good. Really interesting.
Well, we always try and get different people with different sort of parenting stories. And Rich is, he had two kids at 20 and 25. And he's 50 now, so he's got grown-up kids, and he had to move back in with his kids at one point when because he separated from their mum when he separated from another partner. So he moved back in with his kids, which is quite interesting. So, yeah, he's a really funny bloke, comedian, and dad of two men. He's a dad of men.
Do you want to plug his podcast?
Oh, yeah, Insane in the Membrane. Really good podcast. I've been on it, and it's him talking to comedians, and it's really funny, but also talking about male mental health and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's not a serious one. It's fun and funny, but they do touch on that, which is good to talk about mental health.
This is Rich Wilson.
Rich Wilson, welcome to the podcast. I've been wanting you on for ages. We go back a long way.
Me too. Just that's an awkward situation.
No. I'm not saying Josh has been against it, and I've had to sort of lobby him.
Finally, my resistance was broken down, and here we are.
You're like an MP that has to pretend they wanted, you know, a certain rule coming in. Oh no, I did vote for that. Actually, I was away doing really important work. I've always wanted you on. I did your podcast. You've got a great podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
That's it. Thanks, mate.
Which is a great podcast. I've been on it. I don't know if you've been on it, have you, Josh?
No, that's why I won't want it. That's why
again,
I don't want him on
again,
this.
He's not very pro Rich Wilson, but that's something we can address.
I'd love to have Josh on. Josh would be
I'd
brilliant.
Love to do it. I'd love to do it. Yeah. Rich, you won't remember that you compared a gig I did, which was one of the first gigs where I thought, I'm onto something here, which was outside the box. And it was my first time that I actually, after about 2 years of scrabbling around, fucking around, I was like, I'm all right at this.
So you suggesting you saw Rich perform and you thought, yeah, I can do this? Because again, it's not looking great.
Now, Rob.
That's what I used to be like up the creek. I was a barman. I was like, what is this? I can do this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we've known each other years. We grew up in the same area, Rich, and did comedy for years. We used to drive each other to comedians' football in Crystal Palace. But you, because it was weird, when I first met you, you already had grown-up sons. So what's your child situation for the listener?
So I had sons. I had my first son when I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
He's now 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my other one, I had him, how old was I? I was 25. So yeah, he's 24, but 25 in July.
Right.
So, I wonder if 30 is the oldest son we've had on here, Rob. Oldest child we've had.
What are you trying to do to Rich's self-esteem?
I'm trying to give him a little victory here, Rob.
Oh, a little victory. Okay, sorry. Like, hammering him. You're also the oldest person we've had on Rich. How does that make you? No, we haven't. No, Jonathan Ross was on. His kids are a bit younger, I think.
Yeah, I think they are.
Because we met probably, what, 10, 12 years ago? Would it be, Rich, 10 years ago?
I remember you helped I think you helped me move house, or you helped with a mattress or something.
Yes, I did help. Yeah, because you live around the corner. Yeah, because we
this
used to.
This is the most
gigs.
Southeast London Sorry. Story I've ever heard.
No, we used to drive each other, take turns driving each other. Normally, Rich would drive me to football at Chris's place, but I helped you move a mattress in my car. But I remember at the time, like you had like kids that were 20. And I was about 23 and stuff like that. And you was managing, like, you know, because you started off just working behind the bar at a comedy club. And then how old were you when you did your first gig?
So I was 32.
Yeah, so you did it a bit later, did it that way around.
What did you do before that?
Oh, man, all manner of things. I was a bus driver and a van driver and dug holes in the floor and I painted walls. And there's a well-documented story of me working in a gay sauna for a bit. And I've worked everywhere. That's kind of just when people say comedy. I never even knew. I didn't have designs to be a comedian. I just kind of loved comedy and I could pull a pint. So I ended up working in the comedy club. And then suddenly got famous with some of the comedians and they were like, you could probably do this and you could earn a few quid. And I was like, yeah, go on then. And I just started doing it.
Amazing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
So talk me through what it's like when you find out at 20 that you're going to become a dad.
It was a kind of, I think, because when you're growing up, I don't know if this is just a working class thing. Like, nobody ever talked about further education. It was never like, oh, you're going to go to uni and you're going to listen to that. It's always like, well, you're going to go to school, you're going to do the best you can, because you're not going to go on. You're going to get a job. You're going to get a job. And then because then you're going to meet someone, and then you're going to get married, and you're going to have kids. And that's basically how it was always told to me. So when I was told by Lisa, the mother of my children, she said, look, I'm pregnant. And I was like, okay. And we hadn't been together very long. And we kind of, it was like a whirlwind thing. It was the first person I sort of loved. And it was, you know, this exotic woman that lived out of Alpington, where I grew up. You know, like,
where did she live?
Gravesend.
Oh, wow.
It was exotic. By the river, so I was like,
a long distance relationship?
Yeah. We used to have to get the 51 bus and a train.
Oh, wow.
So you met whirlwind. And how long were you together? Was it quite short, did you say?
Yeah, we were only together a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
At 20. And how old was Lisa?
21. Yeah, and I was at college. I remember I talk about not going to further education, but I'd gone back to college after I'd left school and got jobs and things. I went back and I was doing community care, Seeing Guilds community care, because I was going to be a paramedic or a carer or something. Mm. And then she said, oh, I'm pregnant. And so I was like, right. And so I'd read all the books. I'd seen all the films. I go, right, I need to do the decent thing. So I quit college and I got a job in an old people's home. And we did that. We went, right, okay, we're having a baby. And we did that.
That's incredible. And how does that affect, like, a month into your relationship, for want of a better term, you're on the kind of that honeymoon period. And then suddenly you're having to make big decisions together. Presumably you don't live together at this point.
No.
So you're moving to Gravesend. Difficult to suddenly change your relationship in that way.
It just kind of, we just did it. It was we just went, right, fine, we're doing this now. Because I think there'd always been, you know, there have been kids around me my whole life. Yeah. You know, everybody was having kids. There were people.
And that's not a strange age to have two children and settle down, like from our area at 20.
No, it just was a thing. And so I remember going back to my mum and dad's, and then I'd say, look, mum, I'm going to move out. I'm going to go and live with Lisa. And she was like, all right, if that's what you want to do. And so I remember we were driving down and I had all my stuff. I didn't, you know, I was 19. I didn't have 20. I was 19 when she was pregnant and 20 when we had him. And I remember driving down and bags of stuff in the car, and mum's going like, you know, just be careful, just do this, just do that, and blah, 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 blah. And then when we got down the end, and I'd been quiet the whole time, so I'm like, oh God, I've got to tell her, I've got to tell her.
Oh. And then I got out of the car. Oh God, so she didn't even know at this point?
No, no, she just thought I was in love.
Oh, and, wow. You know,
so then I get out of the car, and I get in my stuff, and I'm like, oh, God, I've got to tell her, I've got to tell her. So I'm like, mum, Lisa's pregnant. And she went, oh, I knew it.
Mums know.
Not you being weird. So then, and so, yeah, and so, and it's amazing how, even though you're basically a kid yourself, you kind of adapt. And that's what human beings are really good at. We do adapt to our surroundings.
Yeah.
And so we ended up, we just did it. And then, you know, and it was, we sort of were all learning as we went along, but we're very lucky to have a lot of support around us.
How was it though? Any disasters? Any disasters with the baby? Because you don't know what you're doing at 20. Look, holding a baby. You just sat there with a baby. I've got a baby now.
We lived in this townhouse, right? And so there were a lot of stairs. And we had those, you know, those walkers you put them in, those little wheels, and they wheel themselves around. Like, it's got a tray on the front and they push themselves around.
Yeah.
I remember his name's Keanu as well. I'm so glad Keanu turned out to be a legend and not a pervert.
God, yeah. Imagine. Oh, no, the names you could have picked.
Oh, but the thing is, because Lisa was very spiritual and she was into crystals and all that sort of thing. And Keanu actually means something like rain over the mountain or something like that. So yeah. She was like, oh, yeah, we should call him that. And just, but yeah, so Keanu would be in this little wheelie thing. And I remember I was in the kitchen and she kept going, keep an eye on him. I'm getting in the shower. I'm like, all right, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm making a cup of tea or whatever I'm doing. And then I just heard this, bum, 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 and Keanu going down the stairs.
Oh my God.
Did he stay upright?
Yeah.
He got wedged in the banisters halfway down.
Oh my God. The thing is though, if you're like 20 and you're skin and you're renting a townhouse, whatever he was in, you can't, yeah. It's about 15 stair gates you need, isn't it, yeah. In a townhouse.
We had to keep moving it around depending on what room we were in.
Is that what you did?
So if you're in the kitchen, you put one, yeah, they put it across the kitchen door. If you're in the lounge, put it across there.
Amazing.
So then they would have been like, when you were like 35, they would have been 15, 16. And they're like your mate then. So did you ever feel like they were like your mate as well as your kid? Because you're so young still.
Absolutely. Yeah, even now it's like... Yeah, there's not that big a gap, so it's really cool, you know. And what's cool as well, now they're older and they've got, well, you don't realise, you still worry about your kids. They're your kids. They never will not be your kids. But you don't realise that they've got their own thoughts and opinions on things, and they've sussed out the world around them for themselves. And, you know, they need you, but they don't need you. You know, they're grown-ups in their own right. And I remember what you can do now, you can kind of, you get like an assessment as a parent. It's like, so how did I do? You know, like you get an appraisal.
Well, have they given you feedback?
You kind of go, because I was worried that because, you know, it, like Lisa and I stayed together for a couple of years, and then we spent most of the 90s getting back together and splitting up, and then Bailey came along, and then, you know, we got back together and we split up and we did all that. And then, you know, again, I was still young. There was a lot of, I still felt I needed to do stuff that I hadn't done when I was younger. And so you make mistakes and you fuck up a little bit. But then, and then I remember saying to the lads, I was like, I feel like I could have been better. And they're like, what are you on about, Dad? You know, despite everything, you were still around. You know, they used to come to me every weekend. My partner at the time, we got this house. It was like a ski chalet in the middle of nowhere in Caterham near Croydon. So there were no neighbours. There was all this wood, and there were deers in the garden, and there was all manner of animal life and snakes and all sorts. And they had the best time. And they just went, yeah, it was great, Dad. It was great.
Yeah, and you were beating yourself up the whole time.
Yeah.
Did that, because when you're splitting up and you're getting back together and stuff, was it difficult to, I know people that have split up recently and stuff, and it's really difficult to put the kids first and take all that personal kind of,
yeah,
problems away from them and keep them insulated from that. Did you find that was a kind of really at the forefront of your mind?
We were really good, actually, Lisa and I. Even at points where we just despised each other and really hated each other, we never used the kids against each other. It was never like you're never seeing your kids. You never, you know, it was all, we made sure that the kids knew that they were loved, and it never really, you know, we, and it got to the point like Lisa and I ended up being really good mates.
Yeah.
we actually, despite everything and despite how young we were when we met, we actually were quite mature going forward. You know? We had our moments, of course, but
Those moments normally occur when like either one of you starts seeing someone new and then that person's introduced to the kids. Was that a problem? You know, I've had friends where that's sort of been an issue in the past where like, it's all sort of gravy until someone gets a boyfriend or a girlfriend and they get introduced to the kids, and that's where it gets a bit edgy.
Well, do you know what? It's funny. It would normally be the other way around. Like, I would meet someone or Lisa would, but then because Lisa and I were really close, sometimes it would affect the new relationship. Because I just thought that's what you did. I was like, look, no matter what happens, Lisa and the boys are the most important.
Yeah, of course.
But I love you and this is great, but I need to take care of them still. There was still a sense of...
Very intense way to open a first date, Rich. Very intense.
I like you, but just so you know, Lisa and the kids are more important than you and always will be.
Is it my Tinder profile?
Yeah. Drawn sparkling or fizzy water.
You will never match them, but do you want to go? So you had that with your like new partners would be a bit like, well, what's going on here? You're a bit too pally-pally, because they'd feel insecure as well, you know. It's easier for the new person if you despise your ex, isn't it?
Yeah. But then, you know, I was very lucky as well that I'd met people that were very accepting as well. And, you know, it kind of became a really nice sort of unit. Everyone sort of got along. It was very nice. Really
did
nice.
The boys ever kick off with new people? Well, you know, when they were teenagers, were they ever difficult?
No, but I did realise there's been a couple of relationships where they didn't like the person, and I didn't realise until after.
Oh, really?
And I remember the last couple of years, and I was with someone, and I never saw him. I never saw him, and I'm like, really? Why don't you come to the flat? I live in a really nice place. You come down. You're like, yeah, Dad, yeah, maybe. And it's not too hard. Like, oh, yeah, she's a dickhead.
But they kept it quiet.
Yeah, and I'm like, all right. Oh, I didn't realise. Oh, Dad, I'd rather just, you know, we didn't know what you were doing. Yeah.
What's the, like, there's this kind of big thing where it's like, when they're 18, I'm going to take them for their first legal pint and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do that?
Have you
been on the lash with your son?
You know what? It's funny because my youngest, Bailey, I said to him, because the way my father and I stayed connected, you know, was through music. So we'd go and see bands together when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So he introduced me to all manner of amazing bands, like The Damned and all these other cool things. I knew Bailey was more into his music than Keanu was. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll do that with Bailey. But he was never interested. And then one day I said to him, why don't you have a pint with your dad? He went, because Dad, he used to come in and you'd had a few, he said, and you'd come in and you were just like bouncing on the bed and you were mucking around. He goes, and it frightened me a little bit. And I'm like, because I was exuberant, I was pissed. And I'm like, hey, get up, come on. He said, and it really troubled me.
Oh, God.
Sorry. He's all right now. We've had a pint now, but
yeah.
I tell you what, though, you're a different parent to me, because if I come in and they're asleep, there's no way I'm going, yeah, get up. Absolutely. Absolutely not.
I was playing with the cars. And yeah, I've got a really good relationship with my lads. And it was really funny. Like I said, they've worked it out for themselves. They know what's going on. They have a good idea about what's happening politically and you know, all the changes and things like that. And they did, I remember hearing my youngest, Bailey, saying to his mate, he goes, well, you know, the thing is with Dad, he just needs a little bit of looking after.
Oh, like, God. How did that feel?
I was like, yeah, he's probably right, actually. I'm a bit of an idiot.
That's better happen in about 30 years, Rich, not now.
I know, but already I'm like, well, I think because I am a bit of an idiot and I do end up in situations where I shouldn't.
And didn't you move in with your boys? Was it Bailey you moved in with?
So Keanu lived with me in Greenwich while he was studying to be a dancer. And then when India and I sadly broke up, I moved in with him in Bounds Green.
What was that like, being the tenant of your son?
Did you have to pay housekeep?
He said, yeah.
It's like the rule. Because people talk about moving back in with their parents, but not their parents moving back in with their kid.
No, I know. It's a weird one. It's funny because I was like, I didn't charge you rent for 2 years, you cheeky bastard.
How did you come to him and go, I need to move in? Or did he go, why don't you come and move in with me?
They knew there'd been issues, there'd been problems, and they just said, look, if you need anywhere to stay, then we've got a spare room, come and stay with us. And then one day, everything sort of came to a head. And so I went over to Bounds Green and just went, look, can I stay for a bit? And then I ended up staying. I did end up living with them for, we stayed in Bounds Green for about 6 months. And then they were like, oh, this is working really well. Why don't we get a flat together?
That's great.
So who's we? Is just you and Keanu? Or did you,
and his now wife, Mary. And it's Mary sorts everything out. This isn't my lad's more like me. So it's more Mary. But listen, you're a pair of idiots, but I'll take care of this. So she found this really good flat in Crouch End. We ended up living there for a year. It's brilliant.
Oh, wow.
So how does it work if you're living with your son who's in a relationship, you're single now, you meet someone, do they come back to the flat?
A real role reversal, yes.
And you're creeping in, telling her to inquire. And what, is your mum or dad living in? No, my son. So how did that work, or did you not do that, or did you just, you didn't bring anyone back?
I didn't bring anyone back. It wasn't like that.
Yeah, because in the morning he's like meeting a new mum. Yeah. You're my new stepmum.
I never did it because it was funny, because like Indra and I had broken up because I was gigging all the time. I didn't really have time. I was always running around gigging.
You don't have to make excuses if you can't pull anymore, Rich. It's fine. You know what I mean? Just really too busy for women, actually. I was way too busy for women from the age of 13 to 22. Busy, like sort of being on my own eating. You know what I mean?
Lou's been too busy for you for the last few years as well,
yeah,
haven't you,
actually,
Rob?
I've been quite busy the last 6 years, as it goes. Just non-stop, busy, busy, busy. No chime, no chance for it, do you know what I mean?
No chime at all.
Yeah.
So I didn't really date anybody. And then I met someone who was in comedy, another comedian. So I ended up sort of staying around there a bit.
Yeah, because it's a bit awkward, isn't it, to bring someone back to the, you know.
Well, they got, I mean, like Keanu and Mary used to say, go, this is brilliant. Like, you know, we get half the rent paid and you're never here.
Yeah. I suppose as well, because going into the Bounds Green one, that might have felt a bit like, oh my God, I'm moving in with my son and his partner. But then in Crouch End, you sort of went in it together and it made it a bit more of a 50-50 thing. Do you know what I mean? That's psychologically, it must have been easier than just like, can I come in? Because it's you're going into their, what if you've looked at a flat together, then you're doing something as a three, but going in like when it's their flat is like, and you're going, oh, can I have that shelf for my milk? You know what I mean?
Like student halls, yeah. Yeah.
Was there a rota?
I do remember when I'd first moved out and I was sitting, all my stuff was boxed up in the corner of my bedroom and everything was there. It was around. I was just lying on my bed. And I'm like, what have I done? For the moment. Oh, God, this is not how I thought this would go.
Did he let you put any posters up, or was the blue tack?
No posters. Not allowed. No posters. So I remember we'd done a gig in, it's called Aldberg or whatever it is. It's out sort of Norfolk, Suffolk way on the coast. And we found some vintage furniture. It was this massive sideboard. And I brought it back and there was nowhere to put it. So I put it in the bathroom because the bathroom was really big. And he came in one day, he went, that's not staying there, is it, Dad? There's a sideboard in the bathroom.
Having to run furniture purchases past your kids. Keanu, I've seen a sideboard. Have they got kids yet? You know, any kids? No grandkids yet?
They're talking about it. Keanu and Mary are talking about it, maybe. She's just started her own business, so it won't be yet. Yeah, the lads live in Bristol now.
All right.
Yeah.
But so do you go down much?
I go all the time, all the time. I love them. They're so beautiful boys. And I remember when they got a little dog called Bernard, and they were calling it. He goes, oh, here comes Granddad. I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Well, yeah, because if you know, if they had kids when you had kids, you would have been a granddad at 40.
Well, this is what annoyed my mum. She was 39 when I said,
no.
I'm going to have a kid.
My age?
Yeah. Still living to this day.
I've got a one-year-old. Like, that's such a different existence, isn't it? Your mum was a gran, and I'm complaining about having a one-year-old.
How are you finding that?
Oh, walking the park, mate. Don't know what all people are complaining about.
I do remember one of Lisa's mum's friends was this giant biker dude called Nick. Very imposing dude. He was massive. And he had like proper Hell's Angel Darms and the mullet and the thing was huge, but such a gentle soul. And I remember when it was all, when it all started and it was all kicking off and Lisa was getting pretty big, and he just took me to one side and he goes, how are you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. He goes, because I realised no one's going to ask you this. It's all going to be about the mum and the baby, which is as it should be. He's like, no one's going to, no, it's not about you anymore. He said, so are you all right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm getting my head around it. He's like, that's all right. He goes, you can talk to me whenever you want. And he used to take me out. It's like Trans Am, it's an American car. And he used to take me out in that. And then we'd have a chat about parenthood and life and all that. Brilliant dude. Really cool.
It's like something from an American indie movie, isn't it? Yeah, like this kind of like guardian angel who's a hell's angel. I don't know, pun intended.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though, isn't it? I think what being a dad at 20 in the 90s must be a lot different than being a dad in your 20s now. Because now, if you're a dad that doesn't do nappies, I think that's old. What do you mean you
that's
don't
like
do
Jacob
nappies?
That's like Jacob Rees-Mogg. That's like someone like that out of touch.
Yeah.
Back then, what was it like? Was you expected to do anything with the kids or just go and earn the money? Was it a bit old school like that?
No, you expected to do your bit. It was funny, actually, because I'm sure it's your mummy saying this. Lisa had had an operation on her breasts. So she'd had them reduced. So they weren't connected. So she couldn't breastfeed.
Right.
So you're not, there isn't this like, oh, I've got to get up and feed the kids. It's like, right, there's no excuse that you're getting up. We're taking it. And I'm like, yeah, but I've got to get to work in the morning. I don't give a shit. You're up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the worst thing, when you're doing the formula and you go, all right, it's my turn. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And you go down to the fridge and you've forgotten to do the bottles before.
Oh my God. And de-sterilite. Also, I don't think the 92 didn't have the machines that we've got now. The Tommy Tippy. Do you know about the Tommy Tippy, Rich?
What's that?
So a machine, right, where like if you've got to do a bottle, you put the bottle in it and it tells you how many scoops to put in, three or four, and then it automatically puts the right amount of hot water in for you to shake it up, and then it puts in the exact amount of water to make it a proper bottle just by pressing one button.
No, we have to do it ourselves. Acoustic.
Yeah. Acoustic.
Unplugged.
Unplugged, mate.
Unplugged.
You got the giant tub of formula and then you got the scoop. And then you scrape it off with a knife and you're like, one, two.
Oh, man.
I think, what kind of formula was it in the 90s? Just like the bottom of an hamster cage, just like chops up. Because I do think like there's a lot of pressure on women to do breastfeeding and stuff like that because it's supposedly the best thing you can do and you can connect with the baby and that. But I do find that because we did a lot of bottles as well, was I think the dad gets a much better opportunity to bond with the child and also do more of it in the night because you can help. If a baby's exclusively breastfed, you feel a bit excluded and alienated from it. You don't feel like you're doing your bit. You're not with the baby. You're just basically just almost like a PA running around going, oh, do you need your drink, you need a cup of tea, and you don't actually do any being a dad stuff. You just do support work for someone with a kid.
Loads of toast.
Where I feel like doing that formula, I think it's good for the dad to really feel connected with the kid. Yeah. And I find, you know, when people moan about struggling to form that bond, if you've been excluded from that because it's just breastfeeding, which is great, I think sometimes women beat themselves up if they're not breastfeeding, but I think it gives the dad or the partner such a great opportunity to help.
Yeah.
You know, and do something and connect with the baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although all those well-rested dads you see at nursery, they've got no connection with their baby. That's what you're telling yourself.
All them fit, sexy guys that are getting sleep. Back then, Rich, you'd have been well within your right to sort of not having anything to do with them to your point. Not in your right, that's the wrong way of putting it, but it wouldn't have been so frowned upon at 20. He's 20 years old. He's just working. He's just getting the money in. Let the mum do the babying. But I think you, by doing that, and you were on it with the formula and stuff like that, it does, it feels like you've got such a great bond with your kids, which could have been really hard to have considering your age and you and Lisa not being together the whole time. I think you've done really well to keep that. And I think a lot of people listening would go, oh God, I'm not there as much. I get them at weekends, but not all the time. But I think you're proof that you can still have a really, really strong connection with your sons and daughters, even if you're not there the whole time because of what goes on.
Absolutely. I think you have to just, it's hard because, you know, human beings, we do have a selfish streak in us. And we're like, oh, what about me? What about me? And you're battling that all the time. And then what happens if you split up with somebody and you're like, oh, well, fuck them all. You know, you got just don't, you know, try to stay, maintain focus on the kids and try and make it as fun for them as possible. And, you know, but you know, there are people that don't care. You know, they'll just go, oh, I took you to McDonald's 2 weeks ago. What's wrong with you? You know, there are some people like that. But
did you ever take them on holiday on your own, like for a week or so to Spain or something like that when they were little? Or
well, we got back together for a bit, and the first time I'd been on a plane was in 1998 when we went to Fuerteventura.
Well, so you were 26?
Yeah.
First time you went on a plane.
And you've got an 8-year-old and they're going, what's a plane like? And you're like, I've got no idea.
No idea. And what's brilliant is that I think Bailey was, how old was Bailey? So Bailey, no, it wasn't Bailey, it was Keanu. And Keanu was just talking about death and crashing the whole time.
And you couldn't calm him down because you weren't confident yet.
Well, I had no idea. I'd never been on one. I didn't know what to do. And he's like, oh, Dad. And I'm like, I don't know. And Lisa was trying to explain. So look, when it takes off, you'll get pinged to your seat and it's quite the thing. And I just I was just white knuckling it. Just the
shit. Was you scared?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'd never been in a plane. Oh, now I'm just, you know, whatever. But it was the first time. Yeah, you're like, oh my God. And you're looking out the window. But because you're so high, you can't comprehend how high you are. So, you know what I mean? I'm scared of heights, but for some reason, when I'm that high, I'm like, oh, no, this is fine.
Yeah. I never get that when people fly to places like Dubai or New York and they just go up a really tall building. I'm like, you've been higher on the way here. What are we doing? And if you didn't see it, you're going to be higher again on the way back. That's guaranteed. If I know anything about going to Dubai, I will be in a plane there and back.
Do you know what I love? Is that everyone's, so we had the London Eye. And then now in every major city in the world, there's an eye. And it really makes me laugh when it's like, all right, London, pretty, you know, there's some things to see or, you know, or wherever. But I don't know, going on an eye in, like, I don't know, Bradford. No disrespect.
Yeah, hopefully if you squint, you can see Leeds. Something to look at. No offence, Bradford. Love you guys. Yeah. Big up, Bradford.
Look forward to Bradford on tour. That's going to be a good one.
No disrespect to Peter Bradford.
So let's go through some of the kind of things that me and Rob had parenting wise.
Isofix. Did you have Isofix?
No, what's that?
Oh my God.
We just about had cowpox.
So Isofix is puts the car seats. You put that in, and then you put the car seat on that. You don't use the struts.
Oh, what? No
Isofix.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember my dad had a van, and we used to travel around in this van. And my dad got deck chairs and put them in the back of the van.
No.
Yeah. And he didn't even bolt them in. We used to have to hang on to the seats in front with mum and dad.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there was no car seats. And I learned to drive in 93. I remember the first time trying to put the car seat in. And it's one of those ones where you can put it in the front seat and then you put it facing the other way, which I don't, just with, you know, with the airbags now, imagine that flying out.
What about pram? What was that like?
Pram was all right. We were lucky enough to, my mum bought us a decent pram. It's one of those ones that you could kick open with one leg.
Yeah. Oh, very modern. Oh,
in 1992, that must have made you the king of the walk.
You just go like, jinging this up and the kids in it and, you know. But, we never had technology like you've got now.
Mate, join the revolution. You need to have another kid. You'll love the technology so much. Yeah, you'll be like, this is so much easier now.
So the big one is, if there was something wrong, you couldn't Google what it was.
No. There were no
Google.
There was the odd book of like how to raise your kids and all that, but you kind of just figured it out. Like you took advice from all the other parents around you, your mum and dad, and who would, no disrespect, love my mum and dad, but were very wrong about a lot of it. Then they were taught by parents that were during the war, who'd been in the war. So, you know, they were very, they're a bit more robust with their parenting techniques. You know, it is a bit more hands on.
And what was the kind of situation with sleep in those days? Because I've heard basically it seems like people just left the baby and then it was fine until about 2001. That's how it seemed to me.
There was that, was it called crying?
Crying out.
But that's really, you know, that's so, when you first take that, the baby home, and I still remember, it was such a beautiful moment. I remember laying him in his crib. We had a little light on the side, and what my mate, who was a plasterer, had built a dividing wall in our, with his big bedroom. and he built a dividing wall. So he sort of called it off the side, and that was the little baby's room. And I remember being in there and just looking at him, and he was like gently snoring and just, you know, doing baby noises. It was one of the most beautiful things ever. And then when they start crying and you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And you sort of, you instinctively, you pick it up. And then you're like, all right, so you change it, you feed it, and you do that. And then it, I don't know, it just, we had Keanu in the bed a lot.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. I didn't want to, you know, And then there's other times when, I do remember when there was one night and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning and we'd fed him, changed him, and he's still screaming and you're just hanging onto the side of the cot going, I don't know what to do. He's hanging out of the crib like that going, I don't know what to do. And so when people go, oh, yeah, just let him cry it out. You're like, it's such a blood-curdling scream.
Yeah, there is.
I remember that. You have flashbacks to those moments when they're little and you're just like, I just don't know what to do. And this isn't stopping. And they're just, it's awful.
Out of my depth.
Yeah.
I have nothing to offer in this situation.
Well, it's a brand new job that no one's really trained for. It's like, if you put me like in court for the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial and I had to do a cross-examination, I'd be like, I don't know what, and I'd be like, don't ask that, but I don't know what I'm doing. Like, Johnny seems all right, isn't he? Or not?
That's the thing, you know, now there's all manner of videos and there's seminars and there's groups and there's...
NCT, was that around?
Is that where you go to, is that where you do a group?
To little groups, yeah.
We did go to one. Yeah, we did. I remember going to one or two. We got annoyed and we stopped going because the other people were just idiots. It's just...
Yeah.
Shut up.
No WhatsApp groups though, which I think is a blessing actually.
I wish I could go back to that time.
See, that's it. There was none of that. It wasn't the internet. Oh, it sounds so archaic now, thinking back.
It does feel like we're talking to a kind of a mum from the 60s at the moment. we're asking you, what was life like before the internet, Rich?
Like Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Tell us about his magical world. Yeah.
When he comes back during the war. I think that's why this sort of podcast works, where there wasn't anywhere where you could talk about it, how you felt and what was going on and other people that were experiencing it, unless there was someone within your immediate family that had a baby.
Yeah.
What do you do? It's different when they're at school because you get the other school parents and stuff, but when they're at the baby stage, you're a bit alone because who's got a baby? You can't just go up to another person with a baby in a coffee shop and go, is yours being a shit as well? You know what I mean? I'm at the end of my tether because everyone's going, yeah, it's going great. I love it. Isn't it a miracle? You're going, I'm fucking tired. I don't know what to do.
And it's funny where, because you do, you feel like you're on your own because all your mates, you know, we were young. She was 21, I was 20. You know, all your mates kind of, they're off. They're going to Ibiza and they're doing whatever they're doing.
Did you have FOMO with stuff like that? I know FOMO hadn't been invented by that point.
No, it was FOMO. It's just as FOMO. It was just pure, simple jealousy back then. None of your complicated FOMO shit.
Jealousy. Green-eyed jealousy. Because the 90s, that really, like, to be 20 in 92 is probably one of the best times to be 20 over 100 years. You've basically got, for the next 10 years, you're going to have Britpop, and in the millennium and Euro all that 96. Stuff and Euro 96, all that built up. And then you're like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. But then you've got these two kids.
Yeah. I think that was half the problem, was that the 90s was so great. You know, you're still young and you're like you've just said, you're battling those things. Oh, I want to be out. I want to be doing this. And I think that's a lot of the reason why Lisa and I broke up quite a few times. You know, I remember when we first had Keanu, Lisa moved out. There was a moment she just went, I can't handle this. And she moved out and I had Keanu on my own and she went back to work and she was living at her mate's house. And so we sort of back and forth the whole of the 90s, you know? And so, yeah, it was a weird time. I think that's why the year 2000, we broke up properly. We went, that's it. This isn't working.
Great way to bring in the new millennium.
Yeah, that is it. You know what? New millennium, new start.
Do you know what? New Labour didn't change anything. Let's break up. Tony Blair promised.
Wow, so much pinned on that man, and he let us all down. This is fucked. So, yes, we ended up breaking up in 2000. And then, I ended up kind of going back and trying to relive bits I'd missed.
Yeah, is there times when you're going out in your 40s, because now your son's 20, so you don't have to get up, when you're catching up on when you're 21?
Yes, there are some moments, and you... I remember being out and I'd been out all night and I knew they were, obviously, I'd been out all night and I went going over and they're like, yeah, the boys are coming over later on. Oh God, and I was hanging, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I came in, but because they're, you know, they were of age sort of thing, and I walked in and they just went, what have you been doing?
How old were they?
They're like late teens, early 20s. And they're like, you're right, Dad.
Oh, God.
Fine. Yeah, fine. I'm good. I'm going to have a shower. They went, you just had one. I'm like, you're all right. All right.
You just had one. Because I'm thinking about giving up drink because I just can't handle the hangovers anymore. But yeah. Do you get a second wind when the kids are teenagers then? Because mine are 6 and 4 and I can't do it. It's game over.
You might do. Yeah, you probably will. You'll get a burst of like, yeah, it's suddenly out of nowhere. You'll be, yeah, this is great. But then
back on again.
I have to drink in such a controlled situation where I know that like I have to have in my head gone, is tomorrow going to be okay? The idea of, you know, like the impromptu pint. I've not had an impromptu pint since like pre-Brexit. Like there's just like the idea of just being hungover is such a kind of military operation now for me. I just can't do it really.
Oh God, you can't be hungover. You've got little kids. You can't. It's because what people don't realise, when you have kids, your life is over. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's not about you.
No. That, you don't mean that sentence, your life is over, in a bad way.
No. I mean, it's not about you anymore. It's about the child. It's about the children.
Yeah, totally.
And that's it now. It's just 24/7 kids. And and of course, that's stressful. And you get those points where you go, what about me? I'm still a human. I'm still a person. Yeah. I've got wants and needs. But then that's why...
I want another shower. Third of the day. Just let me be. Stop judging me.
But this is why things like, you know, for a better example, going to the football or having a night off, whatever you're doing is just, you know, you love kids. You love your kids. You die for your kids. Of course you will. But you know, even with your best mate, you don't want to be around them all the time.
Normally, we'd say, we'd end with asking if there's something about the parenting of your partner that annoys you that you've never brought up. Now, obviously, in this situation, I'm going to give you the option of either talking about the mother of your children, your ex that you get on very well with, or anything about your flatmate, your child, that annoys you, them as a child, that you've never brought up.
I think...
You've got to pick your battle wisely here, mate. It's going to be tough.
It's your ex-wife or your son. That's what we're going with. Wow.
Ex-wife, ex-girlfriend or son.
Oh, my God. Do you know what? I think he needs to be a bit more... He needs to be a bit more tidy. I think he just... Sometimes I'm like, mate, you're going to have to just tidy up a bit. That pube on the toilet has been in there a while. You know, that's... It's not another
worrying
one.
Worrying about your son's pubes, though. That is a weird world, isn't it?
Your son's
worrying
pubes.
Worrying about your own son's pubes.
Do you know, there was once I went into... When he lived with me in Greenwich, I didn't know he was in. And I'd come in and I went to go in the bathroom and he was in the bath. I didn't realise. I go out and I was sorry, mate. I came out and I saw his willy. I was like...
He's grown up, willy.
Mate, wicked. Yeah, it was...
Respect.
There was a sense of pride. I'm like, I made that. but to see him in his
in his prime, were you about to say prime?
In his prime.
Like seeing Diego Maradona at the Mexico World Cup.
A pivotal moment for everybody. You knew where you were when you saw your son's cock for the first time.
Like watching the Beatles perform on the roof of Apple, basically, wasn't it?
Bigger than yours, Rich?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. But the thing is, the next generation are always bigger. Like my lads are both.
Yeah, right.
Natural selection, is that how it works?
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, survival of it.
Right, Rich, thank you so much. It's been brilliant.
Thank you. I will tell you this, though. I mean, there is talk of maybe babies in the future. So,
no. Oh, really?
I'll come over part two. Yeah.
Whoa. So you're not out. I thought you were out. You're back in the game.
Well, I've done my time. I feel like I've had a nice run. I've made up for lost time. The FOMO's gone. I've done all the things I want to do. I think it's time
to settle down now. Settle down at 50.
At 50, yeah.
And have a kid. Well, if you have another kid, definitely back on. Good luck. And yeah, I'll give you your podcast, Insane in the Membrane. Give that a listen. Talking to mainly comedians about men's mental health. It's funny as well, but it's also very interesting.
Yeah, it's all messed up. But I'll have to get you on, Josh. Let's get you on.
Yeah, well, up for that. Cheers, Rich.
Thanks, boys.
Bye. Richard Wilson there.
from One Foot in the Grave. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he said when his wife was pregnant. I don't believe it. Anyway.
Oh, God. Where was that an hour ago?
Bloody hell.
Oh, God. He's a lovely bloke, Rich. So funny.
Yeah. What a great story.
Yeah, he's just sort of quite a free spirit, just sort of quite floaty around and doing different things. But having a kid at 50, potentially. What a part two.
Could you imagine moving in with your daughter, Rob?
I mean, I think the Bounds Green move was a real low point for him, and I think he'd agree to that. Yeah. But then once they went, look, okay, if this is what we're doing, let's get a lovely big flat in Crouch End, and it'll be nice.
Yeah. How would you have been at 20? What's quite an interesting thing for our listeners to do is trace back through some relationships you've been in for just a month and imagine what your life would be like if you two had
had one, and I just actually felt physically sick. It was actually a cold shudder come over me. You know, like in like horror films when you find out the killer's your husband or wife, or you know, like they're in the house. So basically, you get a text message and go, "He's the killer," and you look up and you're making him a cup of tea, and he stood by the knife drawer. Oh my God. You know what I would have been? I would have knuckled down and ended up... I wouldn't have done comedy. I would have ended up really pursuing some sort of office job or sales job, and I would have got loads of money and provided, and I would have been really unhappy. And I would have just muddled through and then died at 70, looking back and gone, only if I rubbered up. But that's me. Rich has made a much better success of his life and enjoyed it a lot. A lot happier. But what about you, Josh? 1 month relationship. At 20.
1 month relationship. Fucking hell. I'd have killed for a 1 month relationship at 20,
right? I'd have killed for a 30 second one. But right, Josh, I'll speak to you on Tuesday. We've got lots to catch up on. Bye.
See you then.